start. Sooners of Oklahoma at 12-0 and still looking for respect nationwide.
What is going on, Sooner Nation? Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Barry and Mac Show. As always, myself, Barry, personal trainer, sports performance coach out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And alongside me, former Sooner wide receiver, 2000 national champ, Mr. Damian Mackey. How are we doing today, D-Mac?
What's going on, brother? Barry don't know this, but he my brother from another mother. Let's rock and roll, man. We're getting close to game day. It's really time to just settle in on those X's and O's. And man, we got to start collecting them W's. We got to collect some W's early and put that hammer, put that heel on somebody's neck and let them know we back.
And as we said in the off season, man, come season time, we were going to be bringing you guys the content. And this week, this is going to be our second pod drop, and there's going to be even more during the season. So stay tuned to the Barry and Mac Show feed. Just had our boy Kewan Jones on the other day. Everybody loved that podcast. Got some video clips that'll be dropping over the weekend from that show. But D-Mac, don't want to bury the lead too much. We're going to talk about the OU defense going into this season today, but two big commitments for the Sooners today. You had Andy Bass, Heritage Hall, 2024 young man, and then we also had Peyton Bowen's younger brother out of Denton Guyer, Eli Bowen. But before that, this weekend, we're not going to probably talk until everything is said and done and the dust has settled. David Stone, IMG, Oklahoma native, his commitment date coming up. It's been kind of this weird deal where there's a lot of forecasts going in and a lot of people putting in the infamous silent commit forecast. Been seeing a lot of that lately. We saw it for Williams-Winery, and obviously we know that turned out to be false information or false intel. Man, did you ever have anybody breaking, you know, D-Mac's news in terms of the silent commit? You know, obviously a little tongue-in-cheek because that wasn't really a thing back then. But what do you think of that stuff and the way places are putting that information out like that, whether true or untrue?
Quick reference to me, no. Coach Blake called me. Roy had committed. I told you that story. Roy committed. I was literally using the bathroom. My mom was like, "Boy, get out the bathroom. I got to, you know, bath Blake." Da, 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 da. And I was not excited about committing. I was not excited. I really wasn't. But how about that? If I had gone where I wanted to go, I'd be in the Pac-4 or the Big Ten. So Stanford or USC would have been my destination had I not become a Sooner. And based upon this hat I'm wearing tonight, couldn't have made a better choice for myself. But listen, silent commits are supposed to be silent. By definition, silent means it doesn't make any noise. So when a kid decides to silent commit, can the people in the community who think they know stuff, the know-it-alls, the insiders, can y'all please shut up and let it stay silent? What you don't know is you going out and telling everybody ruins the kid's moment. And these are 17-year-old kids. They get emotional and they might change their decision based upon social media blowing up. So, I think a lot of people have heard that he likes to leverage social media. He's a guy who likes the attention, which rightfully so. If you earned it, you know what I'm saying? You have the platform, use it. But all these people all of a sudden blowing smoke and saying I'm guaranteeing. And I don't know that helps a lot for us in the events he feels like someone's trying to upstage him or tell his business. So, and by the way, I don't have any insider information. I think we've heard for a while that, you know what I'm saying, OU was the proverbial favorite and that, you know, he kind of flirted with some other schools. But for all the people the last 48 hours to just act like they knew all along and they've got some secret insight or info, it's bogus. It really is. And what you think is making you sound or look cool is really kind of hating on the situation. It's called a dry hating. You're kind of dry hating because you want clout, right? Kind of like you want to be the person who said, I was in the know. Everyone was kind of in the know. So Now, obviously, the guys who get paid to do it, you know, the Adam Gordies and stuff like that, they've got a job to do, and salute to them if they're posting their forecasts on Twitter and the other thing. But you're nothing special if you're acting like you had some insider insight. It's not true. And I actually, well, let me not say that. I would know. Let's just say that I would actually know. And based upon what I've heard, there is no 100% guarantee. Do people feel really good about the situation? Yes, but they felt good about the situation for over a month, for a couple of months. Were there some hurdles that needed to be jumped over in order to get to where we are today? There were. Have those hurdles been addressed? As to my knowledge, they have. But, the whole, oh my God, we're guaranteed. Like, let the kid have his moment. When he picks what he picks, you're setting yourself to be pissed off if he doesn't pick what you hoped or anticipated he picked, and you might potentially hate on your own university trying to open your big mouth chasing clout. So that's how I feel about that. And maybe some people don't agree or like it or whatever. I don't care, right? Because what I'm here to do is just, you know, speak what I know about my university and cheerlead and critique my school and my team. You guys know I critique hard as hell on game days. And if I have a feeling or a notion about a certain situation, I'm going to keep it 100. And some of the, you know, the windfall of information coming out the last 48 hours, what we do know is the pundits posted their forecasts, and now everybody has secret info. And I think that's clout chasing.
I couldn't agree with you more. I don't know if people really get the idea, because a lot of times this is grown men or adults trying to project their thoughts onto young men. And I can't tell you how many times I've been in the gym around some of these athletes, and there might be something publicized that somebody's talking about on a message board with, you know, so-and-so being interested in this school. And then they're around with their friends, you know, making fun of what so-and-so said, or, you know, talking about a different school in another light, and things change day to day. It is such a fluid situation that some of the stuff I read, DMAC, where it's like, you know, they're saying this in relation to the family, or they're saying this in relation to, you know, a close family friend, a lot of it reads like nonsense. And a lot of it reads like that's not real information. I'm sure sometimes it is. There's guys out there who really do their due diligence, so to speak, and nail down some good information. But a lot of times, feels a little flimsy. Real quick, just to talk about the two OU commitments. Andy Bass, 6 foot, 200 pounds, athlete for Heritage Hall, carries the ball, plays defense. Eli Bowen out of Denton Guyer. Everybody knows the Bowen name because of a year ago and because of what we believe, presumably, and we'll talk about him later, Peyton Bowen's going to do for the Sooners. What are your thoughts on these two? I mean, looking immediately, Andy Bass, really good athlete. I'm a huge fan. I actually think I'm not going to put him in Gavin Freeman territory just yet. He's got a long way to go. I don't think he quite has the same explosiveness that Gavin has. What Gavin has is pretty rare for the most part. On Eli Bowen's side, DMAC, I think there's a lot of development that has to take place. What are your thoughts?
That's not what you said off the air.
That is not what I said off the air, guys.
Let's talk about Bass first. Thematically, right? I like to talk in themes. And what I've been most impressed about, and by the way, the recruiting rankings back this up, right? We talked about the actual numbers, and year for year, Coach Venables has recruited better than Link ever did. And then, of course, when you break down position groups, it's not even close, right? We've had so many busts, high caliber players, you know, run-of-the-mill players, four stars, whatever you want to name it. There's been busts all over the place with Link, and really BV has come in, and some of his very immediate recruits have had a great ROI just in his first two classes. So but the thematic data point that I think this adds to the lineage of Coach Venables' recruits is ball players, right? When you think about Lincoln, guys, it was kind of like size speed ratio, ceiling as an athlete, right? And you consolidate that versus BV's recruits, and it's like dudes who love and play football, bass. And I don't know this to be true, and Lord knows we're not going to take Twitter as gospel, but it was posted on Twitter that Bass runs a 10.5. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, he's fast.
He's a 10.5 guy?
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
That translates. That translates. 100%. Here's another thing that's really...
He's explosive,
really...
man. He's okay. Very explosive. I don't think he's Gavin, but he is. Yeah. Give him a little bit, and I think he is in the ballpark. He's another great evaluation.
So I'm going to... I think I'm going to go throw a curveball based upon what you're saying and say this. I think he's possibly a defensive player.
I do too.
He's a quarterback, which means he's intelligent, which means he can consume a lot of information, which means he understands angles and anticipation, right? It's, you know, essentially safety is the quarterback of defense. I wouldn't be surprised if in 2 or 3 years you got a kid like that playing cheetah, playing, you know, the safety who plays down in the hole and can chase people in space, and he's gobbling up grass, baby. So, is he a day one Peyton Bowen? Maybe not. But if your 13 redshirt freshman is a kid like that, it's kind of like what Kiwan said, right? Kiwan said in our pod the other day, he said, you know, I was the scout team running back going against Roy and BMO and some of those other guys. Well, Kiwan ended up being, you know, a very integral part of the run game for many years. If AD doesn't come, Kiwan's probably a feature back his entire career. Even still, he's a supplementary back and he got tons of carries and he scored tons of TDs. A kid like Bass is that kind of contributor. That's like his floor, right? So when you're stacking your deck and the floor is a player who's a 10-5 kid who played quarterback in high school, you know, Heritage Hall, right?
Heritage
that's
Hall.
A football program. That's a football, right? Like Gavin comes from there. Then what's the kid's name from Tech from years ago that I loved him until he went to Tech. Hall of Fame kid that played with Tom Brady. He's Heritage Hall.
Welker.
Heritage Hall. Yep. Isn't my man
Amendola
Shepherd?
Where does Shepherd? I thought I'm he was a sure. more.
Barry Sanders, Barry Sanders Jr. and Sterling Shepard, I believe they're both Heritage Hall. Either way, point is, he comes from a school known for creating football players. They know the X's and O's. They know the angles, right? They're grit guys. I think it's a phenomenal, I don't care what his rating is. I heard he was injured 1 year and then transfer issues 1 year, so he hasn't played a ton. But if you're 5'11 and 190 and you run a 10.5 and you've got another year to play and you're a quarterback, you can't go wrong with that.
Check this out, D-Mac. Check this out. He went sophomore year. He ran a 10.9. And this is stuff that even more important than the time is the trajectory. Ran a 10.9 spring of his sophomore year, comes back junior year, and is running a 10.56.
Man, which means
that's a big jump. Yeah, that's a big jump.
He could be a 10.50, 10.4A guy, right? Yeah. Like, that's pedaway speed, by the way. Just FYI, that's pedaway fast. So, big deal. Now I'm gonna throw a what are those called? A hot take. I'm gonna throw a hot take at you. You ready? You ready for this one?
Go for it. Let's get it.
And I'm gonna make fun of what you said off camera here in a second. I like Eli Bowen. I think his ceiling is a honey badger. Go watch the film. The kid's around the ball. The kid takes the ball. The kid mitts the ball. The kid is a physical tackler. He's slight. He's a slight dude. So I don't think he's a guy who out the gate is going to come in like his brother and challenge for a starting role. But he's a kind of guy. Kid's probably 16 right now, you know, getting ready to have his 17th birthday. And then, you know, sometime in the next 12 months, have his 18th birthday. In 4.5 years, he's going to put 25 pounds on, especially if he's in a program like OU. And in 4.5 years, when he's a third year sophomore at OU, he's going to have some grown man strength. He might grow another inch. He might put on 15 pounds. But if he already has that dog in him, that knack for being a player, I think it's a solid pick. Obviously, it solidifies Peyton, which doesn't hurt. It solidifies the family. It solidifies the program, which is a school where we want to continue to pick, you know, blue chips from that program. And he has all the opportunity in the world this season to make a bigger name for himself in his own merit. And he's the type of kid who has a chip on his shoulder now that I feel like he wants to prove that his brother wasn't the only Bowen worth all the accolades. Again, just a program depth filler. I said this in another group, but I don't know if he's an outside corner. He could be. Kid who won the Thorpe Award, Tomlinson's little nephew. He's a 5'9 guy himself, and I think he went third round or something like that. But it's not impossible. But the way the game is played today, he could be a slot nickel. He could be a high safety. You know, who knows what he turns into down the road. The one thing I'd be interested in is wanting to know his 40 time. He's the kind of guy who I don't know, you know, you got short legs. If you don't have that kind of natural burst, Smitty's squats and running those ramps and stuff isn't going to drop your 42.10. So if he's a 4.6 guy, he's probably a 4.58 guy, 4.55 guy tops. And that's something that could be an issue playing at a place like OU as we transition into the SEC.
I will say this about him. You know, I look at the 100-meter times, and it's a touch concerning. I'd forgotten exactly what they were, but I knew they were in the 11 range. 11.18 as a junior. He had an 11.34, I want to say, in a meet like 2 or 3 weeks right before that. So the speed is a little bit concerning. He's not super explosive like his brother is. He doesn't have that quick twitch acceleration to the ball. He does have good ball skills. He has a really good feel for the game. I'm just not quite as high on him when it comes to where he is going to fit in a BV defense. That being said, I really liken it to, and this is where I would pump a little sunshine on it. Mark Clayton talked about the development in one of our shows that he had to go through to really become the athlete that he became at OU. It took a lot of work. And sometimes if you have a frame that just has not, you know, maybe Peyton Bowen was putting in a little more gym time. Maybe he was running a little more. Maybe he was out doing a little bit more as the older brother, getting a little more in. A little brother was inside playing video games, and now he's a late bloomer. That happens. Sometimes it's the case where you just didn't put in enough work early enough, so you're a little bit behind, but you go to a place like OU, you're in a program. That's not the previous Riley regime where basically you came there in Riley's regime, the athlete you were pretty much going to leave as. Save a CeeDee Lamb. Kennedy Brooks took a year off to get his body right. At this point, everybody knows that story. So I'm, even though I'm a little skeptical, I'll pump a little sunshine and say maybe there's room in the development tank for him to get some of those physicals where they need to be, to match the head ability in terms of just his understanding of the game, the way he navigates space. It's still, there's some impressive things about it. But D-Mac, transition, what a fantastic segue. Transition into his brother and his brother's teammates who are going to be playing for the Sooners this season. Let's preview this OU defense, man. Since we're transitioning from him, let's start in the secondary. I was trying to decide where to start. Let me pull up the Sooners 360 depth chart just to make sure that we got all of our bases covered today. And we're just going to go down this. We're going to talk about the starters. We're going to talk about the two deep. Shoot, we might go three and four deep in this thing. So who knows? So let's go over the starters in the secondary right now. And these are projected, of course. OU hasn't put anything out official. Cornerback. I assume this is going to be field corner, Gentry Williams. Strong safety, Reggie Pearson. This was an early prediction by us. We had him penciled in, said he was going to be the guy at that spot. Free safety, no surprise, D-Mac. The veteran, Peyton Bowen. And then Woody Washington, and maybe they do have, I don't know, Woody feels like a boundary. Anyways, Woody Washington, then at nickelback, we've got penciled in Kendall Dolby. Would not be surprised, as we have Makari Vickers right behind him, to see Makari Vickers kind of take that role pretty quick. I think Makari has elite level potential. So I go through those names, D-Mac. Gentry's a guy who has been in the program. He's a development player. right? He didn't really shine right off the bus as soon as he arrived to OU. It took him a little bit. He suffered through a few kind of on-field injury things, and he's been able to work some of that out. The man has changed his number. Reggie Pearson, transfer from Texas Tech, you know, part of the podcast family up here. Obviously, Billy Bowman, everyone knows about him. I think number two looks a little better on him than number five. And then Woody Washington, also another veteran presence in that secondary. This is the first year. You got a really good blend of older and younger guys, along with Dolby being a JUCO guy at that, you know, projected nickelback spot, you know, when they bring him in. What are your thoughts here in that lineup? Where does that lineup stack up in terms of Big 12 and national, kind of the ability to compete on a national stage with some of those better teams out there?
So a couple of things immediately come to mind. Number one, no glaring holes. Yeah, I think Woody at a field corner would struggle just going against a 6'3 guy who can really run, especially if he's opposite the tight end and that field corner is on an island. So him in the boundary where he gets to hug the sideline, he's got a Willie backer with him.
Much better.
Who's uncovered, right? He's on the short side of the field and generally a high safety with him because that safety needs to cover the field side with the long angle. So Woody at the boundary, again, you talk about 3-year starter, played a ton of reps. He's extremely smart. Vali has a lot of faith in him, and he's a guy who has aspirations to play on Sunday, put up or shut up. Gentry at the field, he's got to stay healthy. He's got to stay healthy. Legit 6'5", long arms, you know, 10'6" type guy who can really, really run, sprinter, but also a ball player. A big time recruit. Guys like that having success is going to keep the Tulsa pipeline open, beat Booker T and some of those schools up in that neck of the woods, is really going to just open eyes and seeing some of those guys have success like they did in the early 2000s. You know, that's a plus. Reggie, we penciled Reggie in the moment that he came in as the portal guy, because we said he was the best defensive player on the field at the OU Tech game last year. He was the best player on the film, both sides. He was a difference maker. And of course, he's a guy who we haven't had since I would probably say Tony Jefferson, which is a guy who knows how to play in the hole. That whole safety, I'm just telling you, it's going to make life so much simpler on the backers, because he is essentially going to be able to fill. He's going to be able to come up and be that fourth gap filler, banana in the B gap to the C gap all the way to, you know, the alley and shutting shit down. I mean, you know, everybody saw that film that got out where he met Barnes. You know, I always say Barnes is a guy who finds people to tackle him. Well, Reggie tackled his ass and the ball flew 20 yards up in the sky and, you know, big time play. That's a play we have not seen since, I would say, consistently Tony Jefferson. So really good to see him. And it allows Billy Bowman to be what he really needs to be, which is a center fielder. I want to see Billy making more plays like he did against Oklahoma State, where he made that angle where he drove on it was an in cut. He drove on like a skinny post and picked it off, took it down the sidelines. I want to see him making more plays like that rather than him having to be the whole safety. He was our best whole safety the last couple of years. Key was our best whole safety 2 years ago. When Key was playing in the slot and really being in that position where he was playing like the nickel Willie backer, he had a good, but that's 2 years ago, right? That's old news. That's Grinch's defense. We want Billy playing high. We want Billy to be a ball hawk. We want Billy squeezing and hitting angles on in cuts, on posts, and playing over the top. That's his MO, and that's where he was dominant as a high school ball player as well. And so when you look at that secondary, the only thing I would say it lacks in terms of like being elite in any conference is length, right? Reggie is a 5'11", 6-foot guy. Billy's a 5'11", 6-foot guy. Woody's a 5'11", 6-foot guy. Gentry probably is about what you want your field corner to look like, but it would be nice to have a boundary corner that's 6'1", 6'2", and long as hell, who's going to be a nightmare to tackle in the flats. And I think the pups, when we get to the twos, the pups are going to do that. Jacoby, Wags, Rowe. You've got 6'1", 6'2", long limbed guys. Vickers, he's again 6'5". He's like a Gentry, long armed guy. So we are filling the cupboard with a ton of those. I didn't even bring up Jennings. Spears Jennings looked really good last year when he played in a couple games, and he's a guy who's going to add quality depth, be a special teams player for us this year. So when I look at the secondary, I think on paper has the potential. We're going to use the P word. They have the potential to be the best secondary we've had in maybe a decade. No pressure. Pipes or diamonds, Barry. Pipes or diamonds, right? Either you're going to blow your wad and bust your pipes, or you're going to produce oil or diamonds. We'll see if they got the sack to do it or if they're going to be soft. I know their leader isn't soft. I know their position coaches, Coach Hall and Valai, are not soft dudes. Let's see if those guys step up. It's pressure. It's pressure, and I love pressure because, like I said, it'll make you rich, it'll break your back. So we'll see how those guys go. As a position group, Barry, in my opinion, most depth. By the way, I didn't even bring Key Lawrence up. Key Lawrence.
He's in there.
Yeah, and he's a guy who had a solid camp, who is going to be a depth player and potential rotational starter. So best position group on the team is the safeties, in my opinion, on the team. And the corners just have unproven talent who need to show up on Saturdays, aside from Woody Washington.
I look at the depth chart there, and the biggest thing that really sticks out, and now we haven't seen DMAC, and I would probably say about 6 years, is these guys have designated spots, and you can feel that there was a real evaluation for who needs to play where. Key Lawrence feels like a really good number two safety in the right system. He does not play like your 1A superstar. He doesn't move like a Billy Bowman or even a Peyton Bowen, but he has ability that when you put him on the field for what, 10, 15 snaps, he's going to be able to make plays, right? A lot of these guys, you think of it in basketball where, you know, the longer your bench guys are in the game, the more chances there are of them maybe getting taken advantage of. But if you got them in there for, you know, to go up and down the court for 2 or 3 minutes, they can really add value to what you're doing. And Key Lawrence, the kind of guy, man, you put him in the right situation, you know, you got a third or fourth series of the game, the offense is already struggling, you throw out a change of pace player like Key Lawrence who can really knock somebody's lights out. Now you have a defense that is a Swiss Army knife of different tools, weapons you can deploy. You talked about Jacoby Johnson. You got him over there on the corner side. Let's say you've got Gentry getting beat by a Quentin Johnston type receiver, right? A big body player who can just go up and get the ball over everyone. You have so many options, and it looks like maybe we don't quite see that at the linebacker spot, and that's where we're going to go next. But when it comes to the secondary, I agree. Probably the most complete position in terms of top to bottom depth, 1 through 3, as well as the role that each player is filling, right? It feels like forever ago that OU was putting, you know, Woody at safety, Key Lawrence was playing corner, Billy Bowman was playing corner, right? Positions that there are abilities that good cornerbacks have that safeties don't, and vice versa, right? There's ways that guys move. There's ways that Gentry moves. His ability to put his foot in the ground and move with a guy is different even than Billy, but Billy's ability to put a foot in the ground and go forward, more elite than a guy like Gentry, right? So it's just, it's different body types, it's different physical capabilities. And now we move to the backers. And what I'm going to do here is throw some names out for you, DMAC, and I want you to tell me where you see them fitting. Because we've heard a bunch of kind of rumors out of camp of who's going to be Mike, who's going to be Will. I'm just going to throw some of the major names out there, and then we'll kind of go through it sort of like that. So Cheetah, we feel that that's going to be Justin Harrington. I don't think there's a lot of guests there. Deson McCullough feels like the number two at that spot, a change of pace guy. Just to kind of throw this out there, we felt when he arrived at OU, I was curious to see what that Cheetah position was going to look like for him. Could he move in space? early on. Sounds like he might have had some issues, but he seems to have improved. But Harrington just moves like nobody else in that secondary for a guy who's that big. I think Harrington probably has that spot locked down. Danny Stutzman, he's played at the mic. He's played Will. He's got, you know, he's the experienced player. He's the player who does have a lot of ability, D-Mac. Does he put it all together? Jaron Kanick was basically became a household name a year ago. Where does he fit? Connor Neer, a guy that I highlighted on 360 that you brought up and predicted might see starting reps at the mic position for OU. And then right behind them, you've got Kobe McKenzie, Kip Lewis, and Shane Witter still on campus, I believe.
Wow.
So there's a blast from the past. So I threw a bunch of names out there, D-Mac. Kind of tell me where you see those guys fitting. Who are the players who you think are going to really rise to the occasion and solidify some of those spots? And maybe ideally, if D-Mac's coaching the defense, where do you think those guys might fit best?
Yep. I'm going to add just one little caveat here. I would say right now today, Justin is the cheetah, and then Deshaun is the 2/1 of the safeties. That could be Peyton Bowen, that could be Pierce, that could be Dolby, that could be Vickers, just because I think that Harrington is the only true cheetah, and I believe that Deshaun can play cheetah in a pickle, or if the pickle is more of a linebacker in the scheme for the week, versus a cheetah literally. Like, I think Deshaun would look very similar to White trying to cover in space. And we all can remember that one 3rd and 16 or 3rd and 18, whatever it was, against K-State, where if we get the stop, we get the ball back with a chance to tie or take the lead. And we've got White as cheetah as the center safety. And because he lacks spatial awareness from that far off the line of scrimmage, he literally creates the alley that whatever the hell their QB's name was from Nebraska. He got his revenge on us from the year before when we beat those guys in Norman. That play happens, and it's not all his fault. There's a front seven that needs to make the play too, but he's the center fielder, and he just doesn't know, you know, how to rob correctly as a safety, go inside out from that far off the line of scrimmage. So Deshaun, I don't anticipate with a player like Harrington having to play in that position very often. And then I think if Harrington is out or having a bad day, I think there are true safeties that they would put at cheetah if they ever needed to in 3rd and long or whatever the down and distance may be. So just add that piece in. Deshaun is probably the 2/an actual safety. And I know that they've been running some of the guys through there to prepare them as the 5th DB in the event they've got to play small. Okay, so there's that. If it's me, I've got Stunts at Mike. I still believe, firmly believe, if your Stunts is your real will backer, you're not athletic enough to beat the big boys. By the way, that might even be Texas. Right. I believe Stunts is, by the way, he's a solid athlete. He's not even a bad athlete. He's probably a plus athlete. I believe Stunts probably runs 4.67, you know, bench presses 275 10 times or 8 times or something like that. Right. I think he's put the work in, and he's, you know, I'll never forget Rocky was not a great lifter his first year and a half. Excuse me. He was in the 225 community. And guys like T. Marshall and BMO, and even Roger Steffen make fun of him. He worked his ass off. And by the time he was a junior, he was in the 275 community. And because backers would do 275 gosh dang, what's that called? When Max, receivers and Bs would do 225. So if Stunts is your mic, we're in good shape. That's the alpha position. He's the defensive quarterback. And I think tackle to tackle, it puts him in a position where he's a plus. We don't have to take him off the field on passing downs. If he's your Will, we're in trouble. Because Wills have to be able to satellite and turn around and run with inside receivers. And imagine him trying to cover a Gavin Freeman type. Not a good thing. So give me Stunts at Mike. You ready for this? And I'll stay Mike first. Connor Neer's going to give him quality depth in practice. I do believe... I can't confirm it, but I've heard from multiple people. Stunts was a guy who, in practice the last couple of years, he knew there wasn't depth behind him. So he not necessarily loaf, but kind of not play with that edge. And so I think having a Connor Neer there, who's a 5th-year player, who's had some success, although playing in a smaller conference, it's going to be one of those things where Stunts is going to have to bring it every day and have that lunch pail mentality, and that's good for us. McKenzie is a guy who, word on the street, he's the best tackle to tackle in run fits. And so, again, that's good because we had a guy like Brandon Moore. Brandon Moore was the best tackle to tackle in run fits. Brandon Moore was atrocious in passing, which is why when he played in the NFL, he played Sam. Like, he played on top of the tight end, and he stayed on top of the tight end. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So McKenzie may have a place where in goal line situations, short yardage situation, he can come in and be an impact player this season. Versatility. That's really good. So I think those are the three main players. And this is what I see. I'm not telling you because I think there's still the belief that Kanick might be Mike. And I think the thought behind that is this is Stutz last year, and we're gonna let him do his thing and be comfortable. But next year, our Mike will be an ultra athlete, and then the guys flanking him will also be ultra athletes. So I understand that philosophy. Mechanic's not ready, and that's a detriment to the defense to have a kid not ready playing Mike. So I believe this year, if it were me, and I'm not telling Coach V what to do, he'd be a will for me because it's a little easier to just chase the ball. At the will position, I would probably have Kanick or Deshaun. I've told you multiple times, by name, I believe McCullough will be a cheetah. By trade, I believe McCullough will be a will backer and play to his strengths, which are going forward and chasing versus turning and running in the hole, trying to cover slot receivers, trying to sink and then buzz the flats. That's hard for certain guys to do. That's a lot of opening your hips and turning and running, which I'd prefer him chasing running backs, quarterbacks on the edge and shortening the porch, maintaining the edge or coming and meeting backs in the whole B gap or blitzing the B gap on some type of cross dogs, coming from 4 yards going forward versus 4 yards going backwards. Kip Lewis is a guy who, if he were 20 pounds heavier, would probably be the all-star in the position. So I think he's a season away from really being a player. But this is, I believe, his third season, or maybe it's a second. It's a second because he came in against Texas, and he had that one little play where he had to run through. Remember that? And
yep, he was kind of I remember.
And we loved it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he's a guy who is like an Eli Bowen at for me, a safety and or kind of a nickel player. Third year in the system, I think Kip is going to be some serious sauce. Kid has heart. He's smart. He hits. He fits, and he can run like a deer. He's just still a little light in the ass, and hopefully this is the year he puts on that 12 to 14, and it's just lean, right? He doesn't need to bulk up. He just needs lean strength so that when a guard climbs to his level, he can not get swallowed up, and he can give him a little pop back. So we hit Cheetah, we hit Mike. By the way, you brought up Whittier, and he's number 13. Like, dude, come on, bro. Everybody's been talking about you for years. I don't get a read on him. I don't really know why. I mean, obviously there's, something mental and or, what I'm saying? He's not doing something right. If two separate coaching staffs have both said he's a phenomenal athlete and both not found a place for him to play. I also know injuries. Yeah, 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 yeah. And by the way, his film was sick in high school in North Carolina. Yeah. He had some really cool film. Something there, some guys just never buy into relative to their peers. And that buy-in is, we talked about that, right? Summer camp, yep. Coach comes up to you and he's like, hey, man, you want to play specials? Like, he might be one of those guys. Or summer camp, he's walking out with the Roy Lees and the Rocky Kalmuses who have earned the right to walk out 5 minutes before stretch lines. Like, dude, you ain't earned the right, bro. You need to be out there for early outs. You know what I'm saying? So, well, whatever the case may be, I don't expect him to be much. Wouldn't be surprised if he did because the kid has the talent. It's just between the ears. I believe Backer has the talent. It's just these guys got to believe. I think they've got their ass kicked the last couple of years so bad that they have PTSD. And Coach V, here's what I anticipate, Barry. He's going to oversimplify things for them so that they can just play ball. He's got safeties with a lot of pedigree and just potential. Like, it's like what Roy did. When Roy came in as the third backer, things slowed down for Torrance Marshall. T. Marshall struggled. 1999 season and even some of the 2000 season, Roy's ability to say, hey, dude, I got the backside B all the way to the sidelines, like from B gap all the way to the sideline. I got you. You know what I'm saying? Screens, all that. I got you. It really shrunk the field for Torrence and Rocky and allowed them to focus. And then by the time Teddy came in, Teddy was a pup in 01. Teddy was a puppy. He was a sophomore. He didn't redshirt. So Teddy's a sophomore, but he's flanked by Rocky and Roy Lee, a Buckus and a Thorpe slash Benarik. You know what I'm saying? So it allowed Teddy to just get really good. And then of course Teddy gets older and Lance Mitchell comes and they're still cooking. So yeah, I see that type of safety experience where Coach V is going to find where he can minimize the backers' responsibilities and simplify. I don't want to say minimize because he's not going to remediate. He's just not going to do that. But he can simplify. I think that really helps those guys gain confidence, especially in September. Those guys got their hair on fire early. It's going to really put them in a position to have confidence going into SMU, Texas, right? And then the meat of the Big 12 schedule. So backers boom or bust. It really is. And I think it's mental. The athletes are there. If Roof's son doesn't get hurt last year, it also provides a little bit more depth and practice, you know what I'm saying, expectations. When he went down, we had four backers to play three positions. I mean, we had two, we had 23, we had Stunts, and we had the pup. Like, that was it. And then we quickly found out that Canik was, hit or miss. So we really had three backers, and we didn't have any options besides from two puppies, one weighed 210. 208, which was Kip, and then the other one was, you know, first year ever playing big time ball on defense. So, man. And then, by the way, Barry, last thing I'll say that I didn't even mention, the two highest ceilings, and that's being the two true freshmen. I'm telling you right now, both of them have high IQs, high physicality, NFL ceilings, both. I think if some of the upperclassmen don't step up early, don't be surprised if one of those two step in the action. Just FYI.
Dead on. Yeah. Man, I think there is a matter of fact, I would almost put money on it that if they don't, I actually think they're gonna be okay at Mike. I think between Connor playing that spot, between putting Danny Stutzman in there, I think you're going to have some solid depth. And, you know, one of the things about Connor that was so, he knew his responsibility at Fair State. That's the one thing that really stuck out. He knew how to play within their defense. And if Stutzman is playing outside of himself, which he had a tendency to sometimes do, right? He was trying to be maybe a little too athletic, try to make the play when maybe the simple play was probably the right one, right? Connor is not that player. He is the player who is going to, hey, coach, what's my responsibility? All right, I'll be there. And at Ferris State, that team was so good at fitting the run. They, if I were BV, I would put their tape on. Like, that team was phenomenal. Yes, it's D2, it's a different game, but like, football is football at a certain point, and they were disciplined and knew where to be. And they had a great defense. And Connor Neer was playing middle linebacker in a really good defense. He moves pretty doggone good. And I think he's a guy who is going to really force Stutzman to have to work. But at the will spot, if they, even with Deshaun, if they have any issues with guys getting taken for a ride in space, and what I'm talking about is the stuff what, you know, we saw with Deuce Vaughn, right, where they would just run him to the outside, they'd throw a little pass where nobody's at, and that outside backer had such a hard time, and really everybody, but man, if you can't get out there and close off space and squeeze that sideline, your defense is going to stay on the field and you're going to lose the football game. And you saw it way too often with OU against multiple teams. If that's the case, I would not be surprised to see Lewis Carter get early snaps and really see an opportunity, because physically he has the makeup. He's right there. he's probably, from what it sounds like, one of the stronger, more well put together athletes in the linebacking unit. He's a guy who he moves his hips pretty good. He plays extremely low. His burst is nasty, right? You talked about him being kind of a prototypical SEC Will. And you see it. McKenzie's going to be interesting at that middle backer spot. But, man, Lewis Carter, I would not be surprised to see him get maybe even some early reps. I think you're going to see a lot of guys see snaps early on. But he's a player who he has the athletic potential to really show out. Samuel Omosigo, you know, we'll see. He looks the part. The OU is definitely going to win more first off the bus championships this season, putting some of those guys out there at the front of the bus. But D-Mac moving to the defensive line. That's the last area we'll cover. You know, last season, OU saw some development across the middle. Todd Bates, it felt like he really kind of got through to some guys, your Isaiah Coes, your Jordan Kellys, both who returned this season. A little bit left to be desired on the edge. Didn't quite see that development, and really it showed. It was glaring against Florida State, especially watching their ends, their edge guys get after it against Oklahoma and Dylan Gabriel. But the ceiling has been increased at the edge position. We're just going to go through it right now. R. Mason Thomas, he was a guy I penciled in 2 years ago. I said he was going to be the steal of that recruiting class. He was a three-star player out of Florida who I thought just moved his hips better than any other defensive line prospect they have brought into the class. He's fast, he's explosive, and he's put on some much-needed weight, so he's not going to... Last year, D-Mac, so many times, he just got swallowed up, right? You'd have a big hand tackle with long arms, and he had no shot. Now, judging from some of the things we've seen with the footage they've dropped, he's got an inside move, he's got an outside move, he's got a little bull rush, he's got some different things to get to in his bag that he probably didn't have a season ago. You know, sounds like he's really put into work. You've got Isaiah Coe, so let's go over at the edge first. R. Mason Thomas, Trace Ford, PJ Adebuare, those are guys probably going to be rushing that passer off the edge. Also, Marcus Stripling a bit further down there on the depth chart, we suspect over at 360. On the other side, Rondell Bothroyd, Ethan Downs, Reggie Grimes, right? And then Taylor Ween, we've actually heard some stuff about, Taylor Ween here. He's done pretty good this fall. He's putting on some weight. He's looking athletic. He's a player who maybe surprises but does feel like a development guy. Let's go just edge first. What are your thoughts?
Well, you want to hear the best thing about the edge is the starters last year are now your fourth and fifth dude. Hello, right?
That happened quick.
That's an infusion of depth. I mean, I think 360 hit the nail on the head. You've got a two-headed dragon with PJ and RMT coming off that weak side. Obviously Ford is going to be a specialist. I think if they do something, like a NASCAR package where they've got like three DN types and then a tackle type on third and longish, he's a guy who you can move around and really create some mismatches on the strong side. Bothroyd and Grimes, Downs. I think Downs is a guy who I said it all year last year. If he's giving you 30 snaps, well, I'm all good with that. Him for 30 snaps a game, balls to the wall, chasing people down, effort plays. He's going to be a guy if someone else is putting a ton of pressure on a tackle and then he can come in and finish stuff off. He's a championship. He's a kid who was the 1B at Nebraska in the 90s. He's a kid who's a Michigan second, not second team, but the second guy in the starting role. I think Downs is a guy who is probably going to have his best year because of that depth. And so at the end position, you got safety, you've got O-line. I think DN is probably the number three position on the entire team in terms of depth. And that's a far cry from last year. How many times did we see third down against even schools like Kansas where we couldn't even get pressure 5 seconds later? That's just who we were. The transfer portal was really good to us, recruiting one of the very best defensive ends in the nation who has come in and shown that he's ready to go is really good to us. And then, again, just keeping guys around. Downs is a guy who, when he's like your best dude, that's problematic, especially if there isn't depth. But if he's your third or fourth dude, you know, you're 1B on the strong side, and he's got that motor and he's got those reps and he's got that experience and he's got grown ass man strength. He looked like a D tackle half the year last year. He's kind of leaned up a little bit, got those hips a little bit thinner. And I think that's gonna help a ton as well. That's a group I expect them to be top three in the conference in sacks. I expect us to get to the quarterback without having to bring five or six. You got a kid like Trace Ford who can play 20, 25 snaps a game, potentially third and second and third and longs, key downs. He could be like a Perkins. I see the type of athlete that he is. They just say he's different. Right. And by the way, it's a different than PJ's different. Right. PJ is explosive. He's like a little kitty cat. In 2 years, he's an NFL dude, guaranteed. That's PJ. Trace Ford is more so like a refined technician, right? He's a guy who knows what he's supposed to do. He's refined in what he has to do, and he's got that first step explosion as an end. Different. It's different. It's two different tools in your toolkit, and both of them are at our disposal. And as of right here, right now, both of them are healthy. Bothroy was coming off he was sitting out for a while with an injury, but I think he's going to be ready to go. Downs has been steady, you know, steady Freddy. And here's the deal. Your fifth dude, Grimes, has all the potential in the world. You know, so who knows what happens. He was he had some mental things happening where he didn't believe in he didn't believe in he. And coaches don't have time. We're not therapists, or they're not therapists. You know what I'm saying? Their job is to get men ready to play ball. But who knows, right? That's a pretty good fifth guy coming off the bench is a third or fourth year player who's a grown ass man who has everything you need physically. I think in the right situation, he might come in and offer some really good. If the team is doing well, Barry, you know what I'm saying? And guys are making plays and he's coming in the second or third quarter because, you know, we're 21 and he gets a series and it's not like high pressure and he's not feeling bad because it's not the fourth quarter with 7 minutes left, but it's the second quarter with 7 minutes left. He could be a guy who can win. So that position group, that's the third best position group on the team. I'd go safeties, O-line, and then DNs in terms of depth, differentiation in terms of talent, and then experience.
And I mean, it's the same deal as safety. It's guys who have roles that it feels like they've kind of chiseled out where each guy belongs. They've all been working on that throughout the offseason. And again, it's a snap count thing. A year ago, you had Stutzman and Downs and Grimes playing more snaps than any, and David Aguebu, of course, playing more snaps than anybody else on that defense. This season, you've elevated the ceiling of that position. I mean, last year, it's obvious. Last year, the ceiling of that position was really a 500 record. You were not going to compete with the tackles that K-State was putting out there, right? Texas is always, even if they aren't a great record team, they are always going to have a big, long, good-looking athlete at right and left tackle. And if you don't have a guy who can move, who has some wiggle to him, who's explosive, you're not, and he's your main guy, right? He's your key ball handler, so to speak. And then you got another guy who can play off ball real well, the guy who can kind of your catch and shoot corner three guy. All of these guys have roles now. And when you look at a Downs moving down the depth chart and Bothroyd taking over that spot, he's a player who was all conference over at Wake Forest. He really showed out in the ACC. He's a player who can get it done. Man, they have a chance to be pretty solid. Now we go to the middle, final area we're going to look at before we get out of here today. This felt like a development spot, DMAC. It felt like an area where it is very hard to get high-end elite transfers at the defensive tackle position. So BV counted on guys to step up. And it sounds like one name who for sure stepped up this offseason, and because of that, he'll be the first one I mention, is Jonah Lualu. He looks like a million bucks right now, right? That single digit finally looks like it really belongs on him. When you're a defensive tackle wearing a single digit, you better be a guy. You know, Ronnie Perkins was a dude. It looks like Jonah has really changed his body. For a player to get up to 300 pounds like that, and I think part of that, some of that, you know, kind of Samoan Pacific Islander, man, that just, those guys gain weight and get strong and just look good in a football uniform when they put it on the right way. But you got Jonah Lualu, Jordan Kelly, DeJon Terry, Isaiah Coe, Kelvin Gilliam Jr., Grayson Halton, Devon Sears, Phil Paya, and then a guy who I think still might have a chance to maybe sneak in a few snaps, your Marcus Strong, and of course a player who was not underrated. He really wasn't a ballyhooed recruit, but he was a guy who had a good burst off the line of scrimmage. Still want to give him his due. Seems to have had a good camp is Ashton Sanders. So you see all those names, D-Mac. Terry was a player brought in from Tennessee, really the highest defensive tackle prospect in the transfer portal than probably ever in the transfer portal era for OU, I would say. I don't know. I can't think of another player outside of maybe Bothroyd, right, in the same year. But Terry's really he is a player who size-wise shows up on campus, already looks the part. As long as he's got the mental side down, he is going to be a stable force against the run game. Probably not going to see a whole lot on pass rush, kind of third down, the money downs, but you're going to see those go to some other players. But as a stable force in the middle, a player who can really contribute in the Big 12. You hear all those names, D-Mac. How does that fit, and how did those names end up contributing as a cohesive unit for this team to have success this year?
Yeah, I think as a unit, they have the potential to be an all-conference type unit, meaning like they can be good enough for us to win conference. I don't know that this is a unit that we can depend on, like playoffs. You know, you're going against Bama or Georgia. I think a lot of these guys will get stymied by some of the very best of the best, but definitely an improvement. And I think the biggest thing that Coach V was able to do with this group was, again, provide depth. Very, very intelligent to take Grayson Halden and I like to say Layla. I don't know if I say his name correctly, so I'm going to just say how I say it. I like that those two guys moved in as tackles because they're plus athletes as tackles. They're not elite DNs. So again, just very smart roster management. You get both Kelly and Coe to come back. By the way, both of them are lazy in the offseason. Let's just call a spade a spade. But by the way, both of them have 2+ years of playing and being, positional good players. Right. Coe had some. You remember the year he and both what's his buddy's name that's playing in the NFL now? Cleveland Brown.
Winfrey.
Remember that first year Coe made some plays that Winfrey didn't make. Now Winfrey made a ton of wild plays, but Coe stepped up. Last year he kind of took a half step back, was a little injured, but this is his third year in the program, grown ass man. Now Kelly is a name that if we really think about it, he's had wild plays every year. There's going to be a play where he splits the A-gap. He beats a double team, splits a double team, and he can blow some shit up in the backfield. He's done it consistently for 2 seasons. And then there's going to be games like, where Kelly go? Where Kelly go? Where Kelly go? Where Kelly go? Right? Well, now we have a team where a Terry can come in. And like you said, he's a guy you know is going to play winning football. He's not going to let the guard swim onto our Willie Backer. It ain't happening. He's a grown man. It's going to take two of y'all to get me, which means my Willie's running free, which means we running through, right? We got some run through lanes. So big, big, big win for us. I think Sears is another guy who, although this is a huge step up for him coming in early, playing in the spring, it's depth. You see, and so I just named 4 guys. And like you said, I haven't even said Leilau. I know I said his name wrong, but I'm gonna say it the way I want to say it, right? So, and he's a plus athlete at D tackle, excuse me. And most people don't know this, but Grayson Halton is the best athlete on that D line. He's the best athlete. He's a little undersized. He's still a little undersized, but he is a guy. Listen, this comparison is not going to be based on production. I think it's going to be based more on body type. He has a body like Kelly Gregg. Guys, Kelly Gregg is maybe Kelly Gregg's an inch and a half taller than me, bro. Like, I played with Kelly Gregg. I walked on the field every day with Kelly Gregg. He's about an inch and a half taller than me, and his arms are about as long as mine. Kelly's strong as an ox, smart as an elephant. And you know what I'm saying? He just understood leverage, and he had a burst off the ball. So does Grayson Hall. And so I'm not saying I anticipate him having the success that Kelly had, because Kelly's a guy who, I mean, he was a killer in a fill, but it doesn't hurt when you're sixth, right? You're talking about your D line, and you can go Kelly Coe, both of those guys, three-year contributors. Leilau Terry, both of those guys have three-plus years. And then you've got Sears and Halton, right? And you haven't even gotten to Sanders, who probably has the best first step. Him or Halton, Grayson, have the best first step. So, again, quality depth. I don't think this is championship quality depth. I think this is like conference. We feel good about not getting manhandled in conference. But we pick off a guy like Stone and add him to the equation. Lord forbid we get McKinley. I'm just telling you, it's going to be fun times heading into that SEC. But I think we've got to go back in the portal. We've got a bunch of seniors graduating. So this will be a great way to show, hey, at OU, we take portal players and guys like Trace Ford, guys like Terry, guys like Bothroyd come over here and dominate. And it'll set up for us to get some more next year, because we're going to need a little veteran help to support these puppies. Conference championship depth is or a ceiling is what I would say this group has. They'll be fun. They're not going to like get their asses kicked if we're playing against the best of the best, but I don't expect our D tackles to dominate a guard, center guard, you know what I'm saying, in those big time games where you've got NFL dudes on the opposite side of the field. Now our DNs, I'm just here to tell you, they'll give anybody problems. We've got guys who, if they're on, they can go beat whoever they need to beat, especially if we go NASCAR and we've got Ford and Bothroyd and PJ on at the same time, or RMT, who's, by the way, not far behind that crew. That's a solid, solid championship caliber D-line. And so I think mixed together, you've got a front that are not going to get pushed back, which is going to give the linebackers lanes. You've got DNs who are either going to make quarterback step up in the pocket or flush them and run for their lives. And you've got backers who can run. That's a recipe for us to have a rounding difference on defense. This will be my hot take. I think you'll see our defense playing on the opposite side of the line of scrimmage much more this season than we have probably the last three or four.
Man, I'm going to finish out kind of my comments with this. You know, last year we said, and really we've said it for a while, but when OU starts having more defensive players on that, defensive players who can play in the NFL, even if it's just getting a cup of coffee, you're going to start seeing a better team. And this is the first season, man. You really look at every single unit, there are guys at every level, and you say, oh, okay, two out of the four in the secondary definitely going to get drafted, but possibly two first-day guys. And if Gentry turns out to be what they expect him to be, he's a first, second-round draft pick. The athleticism is there. Billy Bowman, I think he's already shown enough that he goes out there, puts up big numbers at a combine. He's a first through third-round guy, right? Especially if the tape is good this season, a year in BV's defense where he really, you know, kind of puts up or shut up. And Woody is probably going to get a shot. Right, so you got three guys in the secondary, save Reggie Pearson Jr., who somebody's going to give him a shot too. I mean, a guy who can do all the football stuff. I mean, I don't think anybody saw Tony Jefferson having the career that he had in the NFL, and he's a long-term guy now. At linebacker, Stutzman has the athleticism to get a shot. Deshaun McCullough, a body like that, he's probably also going to get a shot. You look at the edge. PJ, when his time comes, he's going to be a top 10 pick. He's ready to go. Trace Ford, if he didn't have the injury history, he'd already be in the NFL. That's just kind of my take on that. Bothroyd, he's another guy, consistent as the day is long. You can put him on either side in a certain defense. You might be able to put him inside. Like, he's a guy who can do a lot of different things depending on the type of scheme you're running in the NFL. So you look at that, and I just kind of bring all that up to say there are NFL players on this defense that were not entirely absent a year ago. They just weren't there. At linebacker, in the secondary, at the defensive line, guys who just didn't quite fit where they belong. D-Mac, you kind of brought up what the ceiling is, you think. I'm kind of with you. I think 9 to 10 wins, conference championship, really good bowl game, probably going to be able to compete with the top 15 to 10, possibly push a top 5 team, you know, if it's the right matchup. I don't see them getting over that proverbial hump of, you know, beating a top 4 program, and, you know, especially in a playoff scenario, at least with kind of what they will look like day one. But in terms of statistics, to give fans a clear picture, last year they finished at the bottom of the heap. Do you think this defense finishes top 40? And let's do this. Let's do what really matters. Let's go points per game, right? So last year, I want to say what they give up. 27 was what I want to say. It was something in that ballpark.
I'm going to say 26, about 26 and a half.
Okay. I got my number, and I'll save it till you. Actually, no, I'll go ahead and tell you mine. I think they give up 3 touchdowns a game this year. I think they finish around 22 points per game. Where do you think they finish?
Well, let me tell you the differences in the league. A lot of programs breaking in new quarterbacks, including the new entry teams, right? Cincinnati, BYU lost a lot, right? So that's going to help us. Oklahoma State. A lot of the mobile quarterbacks are out of the conference, so you're not going to have a ton of guys beating you with their arm and their legs and their mind. And I believe we're going to run the ball more this season. Here's what I'm looking at, Barry. Is Levy going to take his foot off the gas, or is he going to continue to put us in situations where we have to have additional drives on our defense in the second half of games? If we're up by 13 with the ball in the third quarter, is he going to go, you know, super warp speed, or is he going to slow things down and take the air out of the ball because we're leaning on them? If he does that, I think that this is a defense. I like what you said. Between 22 and 24.
I got your numbers right here. You want to hear them real quick?
Yeah. What is it, point per game? What is it?
Okay. So OU last year finished seventh in the Big 12. No, eighth. 29.8 points per game.
That's conference. So that's the conference.
That was
right?
The conference. That was the conference. Okay. K-State, and this is okay. So this is about right. K-State finished number one. They gave up 20.1 points a game. Iowa State was right behind them at 20.3. So if OU gives up 22, they're going to be right in the ballpark.
If OU gives up 22 points per game and the offense does what we think the offense can do, we'll be where we need to be. 29 is ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. Not okay.
Four touchdowns.
Yeah, bro, you're wild. And so, or 3 touchdowns and 3 field goals. That's 6 scoring drives, right? Depending on how you do it. I'm looking right at 23, 24 points a game. What matters, though, is third down conversions, because we were absolutely atrocious getting off the field on third down, and plus minus on turnovers. We've got to be opportunistic. If we can make plays and put the ball back in our offense's hands, that's really going to be the linchpin to the growth and the expectations we want to meet.
Man, fantastic stuff as always, D-Mac. It's late on this Thursday night, early Friday morning over here in Oklahoma. But man, want to thank all the fans who continue to tune in, support the show. We can't thank you enough. Go check out 360. A lot of cool stuff over there. But make sure you're following the show. Follow me on Twitter at BWise Fitness, at letter BWISE Fitness. Follow DMAC at D_Mac13, and follow the show at Barry and Mac SHW. And if you're in the Tulsa area, going to have some surprises coming very soon. I can't give a lot of details on that, but going to be some cool stuff coming down the pike. So just be on the lookout. D-Mac, anything as we close out today, brother?
Less than a week. Let's go win some damn games. I think we got 9 days. 9 days, guys. Pins and needles. Let's go kick some ass.
Love it. Sooner Nation, thank you so much for tuning in. We will see you soon.